Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. With me, your host, Francesca. So I had a week's break last week just because things got so busy over the Easter period. And I'd also just moved house. So I've moved from London to Margate to be by the sea, which I've all spoken about on previous episodes. We've been here now 5 weeks. So I just really needed to have that 1 week where I wasn't recording, and things had just been so manic in the lead up to it that I couldn't actually record double the load the week before. So here I am back again after a little break, and here we're back with episode 36. So in this episode, I want to talk about how perimenopause impacts your gut, essentially how the changes in hormones that occur to us during perimenopause and beyond, you know, way into menopause as well, how they impact our gut health and basically create changes in how we experience digestion, various symptoms that we may have already had in the past can sort of start to come back with a vengeance. If we were someone, for example, that has irritable bowel type symptoms in our history, they may, and maybe they were calm for a decade or so, they may start to rear their heads again, or they may all just be completely new symptoms. And it's definitely something that I'm dealing with only in the last month. So I could put down some of my new symptoms to stress, this sort of stress and excitement and the anticipation of my big move from a city to a seaside town. And, you know, we all know that stress, moving house is one of the most stressful things. So it could just be that it might start to settle down, or mine could be related to the sort of changes in hormones that I'm going to talk about today. Because as I say, as I remind you in every episode, I am in the throes of perimenopause with you all. I'm 45, almost 45 and a half. So, you know, with each passing month at this age, it is moving me further and further into that sort of perimenopause hormonal storm. So again, could this be where I am in perimenopause that's causing my current gut symptoms that I'll talk about as we go through? Or is it the stress? I don't know. We're going to have to see if things settle down or not in the next couple of months as I settle into this new place that we're living in. Okay, so I'm going to talk about the key ways that gut health changes in perimenopause and what that sort of means in terms of symptoms like bloating, constipation, food sensitivities, new or again, previous ones that have reared their heads again, and even symptoms like fatigue, joint aches and pains, changes to your mood. We'll talk about how all of that is impacted as well. So let's just get straight into it. So we'll start with talking about changes to the gut microbiome. Basically, the microbiome is a collection of tiny little organisms known as microbes, so tiny things, so certain bacteria that live in a particular part of the body, for example, the skin or the gastrointestinal tract. So today we're talking about the gut microbiome. So we're referring to the community of tiny little organisms or microbes that specifically live in your gut. And we actually, you know, when we hear this, we think, oh, yeast, bacteria living in our gut, surely that's not a good thing. But actually, we depend on a vast sort of army of microbes in order for us to stay alive. There's more of them than there is of us, essentially. If we break it down in terms of, you know, trillions, we have trillions and trillions of little bacteria living in our gut. And they protect us from germs and pathogens and pathogenic viruses. They protect the lining of the gut from damage, from weakening. They help us to break down our food, to metabolize it into energy, to release energy from our food and provide nutrients to us from our food. So that is all if everything's good. If we have a very healthy microbiome, meaning we've got lots of lovely protective bacteria, you know, we've got low levels of the yeasts, the fungi, we've got low levels of any pathogenic, unfriendly bacteria. The friendly bacteria is running the show. The others are all there, but they're kept at bay and just living in harmony with each other. That is when we have a protective gut microbiome, where we have this, the lining of our gut being protected, and we have our food being broken down really well, and we're protected from pathogens. We've got lovely amounts of, for example, hydrochloric acid, which bathes our food when it comes in to the small intestine from our mouth. And that hydrochloric acid bathes that food and makes sure that there's no pathogens allowed to live within our gut and cause food poisoning, for example. That's when everything's working really well within our gut microbiome. But what happens is in perimenopause is that the changes in estrogen, so for example, it's erratic fluctuations, so 1 minute really high, 1 minute really low, and its subsequent decline later in perimenopause and into menopause when we don't have any anymore, that's been shown to result in a decrease in both the diversity and the amount of healthy bacteria that we have living in the gut. And when I say diversity, I mean lots and lots of different strains. So we don't just want, you know, one or two different strains of bacteria living in our gut. We want multiple different strains living there, because that's what's more protective. That's what makes up a healthy microbiome. Lots of different strains living together. So diversity, both in the gut and in the real world, are very good things. And also we want a healthy amount of bacteria, so lots of different types and good amounts of it. But as I said, the changes in estrogen can create a shift in that, and that can start to lead to less protective gut microbiome, basically. So now we have a buildup of, we have a kind of overgrowth of the unfriendly bacteria, which isn't protective, and the friendly bacteria not as in healthy amounts anymore due to the changes in estrogen. And then that can start to create symptoms like bloating, gas, flatulence, changes in bowel movements like loose stools or urgent stools, or constipation, or a mix between the two. So basically your sort of typical IBS type symptoms. It can also start to cause a weakening of the gut lining, because there's less, if you like, soldiers lining this gut lining, so standing to protect this gut lining, to protect it from damage. And that's really important, and we'll talk about that in a moment. And then within this microbiome, this collection of tiny bacteria that's living in the gut, there's also something known as the estrobilome. So estro meaning estrogen. And what it means is that in this estrobilome, it's a subset, so a smaller set of gut microbes that basically are responsible for metabolizing or breaking down all of that used old estrogen that we don't need anymore. Once we use our estrogen molecules, we need to get rid of it out of the body, whether it's high, whether it's low, doesn't matter. And they go through the liver. I've talked about this on previous episodes before about how we detoxify or clear out our old used estrogens. It starts in the liver, and then the liver sends that broken down estrogen into the gut through the bile. Once it's in the gut, there is, as I said, this subset of bacteria known as the estrobilome that are really important for the proper clearance and breakdown, further sort of breakdown and clearance of those used estrogens once they're sitting in the gut. And if our gut microbiome as a whole can become less diverse, less abundant, then the estrobilome as a whole will also become less diverse and abundant, and then therefore less efficient during perimenopause and onwards at further breaking down our estrogen and making sure it's cleared out of the body. And if we're not able to properly clear out our used estrogens, we can end up with that going back into circulation into the body and causing those typical estrogen dominant symptoms, or more dramatic hormone fluctuations. So the highs at the high points of the estrogen roller coaster will feel more dramatic. And those symptoms that come with that, estrogen dominant symptoms, are your heavy, painful periods, clotting, breast pain, usually around your period, worse PMS, new PMS, mood swings, fibroids, for example. And then the next thing that can happen is this situation of what's known as increased gut permeability. So gut permeability basically means that the gut lining becomes permeable, so it allows things to pass through. This is a situation also nicknamed or known as leaky gut, because it allows things to pass through. So let me just explain exactly what this means. So in normal physiology, in a healthy gut lining, the cells of the gut lining are very tightly packed together. These are also known as tight junctions. They don't have any gaps between them. They line the small intestine, where they absorb nutrients from your food that comes in and allow those nutrients to be absorbed into the bloodstream. But what they do, which is really, really important, is that they keep inside the gut all other particles and substances. The only thing they allow to pass through the gut into the body is those nutrients absorbed from your food. any other particles need to stay firmly inside the gut. So you can kind of see the gut is separate from the rest of your body. We don't want them passing through into the bloodstream because they'll cause issues if they do. And those examples of those sort of particles that can pass through are basically things like food particles, undigested food particles, or bigger food particles that just haven't been broken down properly in the chewing process, for example. Gluten in some people can pass through and cause issues. Pathogenic bacteria, any toxins, any viruses, any of these things that are in the gut, we don't want them to be passing through into the system because there they start to wreak havoc. So when the lining gets damaged, those very tightly packed cells, these tight junctions, can start to weaken. They're not so tight anymore. They start to form gaps between them. I like to liken it to a sieve where you're trying to run, you're running water over rice, that's dry rice that's in the sieve. And you want that sieve, you want those holes in the sieves to be really, really, really tiny, tiny, tiny holes that just allows the water to pass through when you're rinsing the rice and no bits of rice, rather than a weaker sieve that you wouldn't use because the rice would start to fall through out into the sink, which you don't want. So when that lining is that those tightly packed cells are becoming bigger and weaker, it's now allowing these forbidden things, these food particles, gluten, pathogenic bacteria, toxins, to pass through and get into the bloodstream. And this is a situation, as I said, known as gut permeability or leaky gut. So the opposite of that is what we want is a impermeable gut lining. This is one that has the really, really tight cells packed together. So when things do get through that lining that shouldn't into the body, it starts to cause unwanted immune responses, which are basically inflammatory responses within the body. The gut and what comes into the body from it is so closely linked to the immune system and immune activation because of this situation of potential gut permeability. For example, when these unwanted particles can leak through into the bloodstream that shouldn't, the immune system molecules like, for example, toll-like receptors, also known as TLRs, all different numbers, become activated. These are immune system sort of fighting chemicals, basically. They become activated when they shouldn't. They don't need to be activated. This isn't actually anything particularly wrong, but it sees it, you know, as invaders coming into the bloodstream because they shouldn't be there. So, for example, toll-like receptor 4, TLR4, is one of those toll-like receptors that tells the mast cells of your immune system to release granules full of histamine and other inflammatory compounds into the system. And that results in systemic inflammation. So this big inflammatory response, which can cause fatigue, headaches, joint aches and pains. And it also, as I said, it releases these granules full of histamine, can cause histamine-like or allergic-like reactions or outbreaks. Rashes, skin rashes, skin issue, other sort of skin outbreaks. It could be itchiness, red flushes, hot flushes in the face. All of these kind of histamine-related reactions can be brought on. TLRs, these toll-like receptors, they can also activate something called NF-kappa-B, which is another major immune system molecule. And it's a major amplifier of inflammation. It's like the immune system's battle horn. It's saying, whoa, there's big problems here. So essentially this leaky gut, this situation of leaky gut where toxins and particles get to pass through into the bloodstream is a major issue. So this NF-kappa-B is putting its horn on to alert the immune system. And this is how leaky gut or gut permeability can cause chronic inflammation and an altered immune response over time in a person and increase the likelihood of autoimmune disease. And I talked about that on the previous episode, how perimenopause itself is a time in our life, as well as postpartum, where we can see these activations or triggering of autoimmune disease in a person. Whether it was there before or it's only just come on, because it's this change in hormones and how it can really start to shift things, specifically cause this situation of leaky gut, which is so closely linked to altered immunity and then the onset of autoimmune disease. And so the thing is that estrogen and progesterone, they're anti-inflammatory. They're really lovely anti-inflammatory hormones, which is why we get things like, joint muscle aches and pains during perimenopause, it's usually due to the loss of the anti-inflammatory actions of estrogen and progesterone. So where they're declining, and or estrogen is erratic, so, you know, the earlier stages of perimenopause, we're not necessarily seeing declining, genuine declining levels of estrogen, but we are seeing this erratic roller coaster, these high levels followed by really, really sharp drops. So either way, whether it's genuine declining estrogen and all the erratic fluctuations and also the declining progesterone, it can start to weaken those tight junctions because they were protective for the gut lining before. They're preventing any sort of breakdown and weakening of that gut lining. And therefore, we start to see that the increase in the likelihood of intestinal permeability, this leaky gut. So symptoms of intestinal permeability or leaky gut, as well as your obvious digestive issues like the IBS type symptoms like bloating, gas, flatulence, loose stools, constipation. We can also start to see, as I said, fatigue, low energy, brain fog, insomnia, achy joints and muscles, headaches, hormonal imbalances further driven by this situation, weight gain or trouble losing weight or stubborn belly fat. Obviously, that can be your sort of blood sugar dysregulation, insulin resistance, which I've talked about on previous episodes, but the gut is also closely linked to this. You might find you feel that you're slow to recover after exercise. Low-grade nausea as well can be something. And then, as I said, this onset of the triggering of autoimmunity can become more likely, whether it's rheumatoid arthritis or Hashimoto's, which is the autoimmunity against the thyroid gland. Now, just a note on gluten when it comes to gut permeability. Gluten can be misinterpreted as a pathogen in some people. So, you know, obviously we have the genuine gluten sensitivity or intolerance, I should say, which would be in somebody, for example, who has celiac disease. They should avoid gluten at all costs. But it also, in some people without celiac disease, they can still have this sensitivity to gluten because it is seen by a pathogen by their body. And in those cases, toll-like receptor 4, TLR4, that we just mentioned, is released by the gut, that gut immune system, and it starts to increase a protein called zonulin. Now, the protective mechanism of zonulin is that it allows the cells of the gut lining to open just a little bit to allow water from inside the body to come into the gut and wash out this perceived pathogen, which in this case is gluten, which is unfortunately not a pathogen. It's just coming through their lovely sourdough or whatever it might be. But unfortunately, the zonulin, because the body has seen it as a pathogen, perceived it as a pathogen, zonulin is doing the right thing by trying to wash it out. But unfortunately, over time, increased levels of zonulin can start to increase or worsen this situation of gut permeability, this leaky gut. So that's how, in some sensitive people, gluten can be a problem. And if they were to completely remove gluten from their diet, they can find that their gut health starts to improve. And it may be that person can just enjoy, for example, a very good quality sourdough, maybe once a week or once a month or up to a couple of weeks, but it might just be something that they need to take out on a sort of daily, more regular basis. And then the other change during perimenopause and beyond is food sensitivities or food intolerances can start to show their face. Maybe they were never there before and suddenly you're reacting to foods that were never a problem before. So this kind of follows on nicely from the gut permeability point and its impact on immune function. Progesterone and estrogen both have positive immune modulating effects, which means that they really support the immune system responses to respond in, you know, the appropriate way. And so as they decline and shift, so whether it's that genuine decline of estrogen yet, or maybe you're in the later stages of perimenopause and it has genuinely declined, or you're postmenopause and you don't have any, and as progesterone's already starting to decline from early perimenopause, that can start to impact our tolerance to certain foods that may have been fine in previous years. So some women can become more prone to these gut-driven immune responses or sensitivities, which we commonly refer to as food intolerances. And this is where I get a lot of questions about, can we do food intolerance testing to see which food I'm reacting to? But I don't personally use food intolerance testing in my practice. I see it's kind of like a waste of money because most of the time it's not the food itself, it's actually the leaky gut lining, the gut permeability. If your gut lining is permeable, most or many foods can end up causing this inflammatory response, which doesn't feel nice. So we might experience bloating, gas, loose stools, headaches, fatigue. And really and truly, if you fix the gut lining, fix gut health as a whole, you shouldn't need, you know, you should be able to tolerate all the foods. And it shouldn't, you shouldn't kind of need to spend money on food intolerance testing to see which food's bothering you. And then you give up that food. But actually, if that's not the root cause of the fact that that food is bothering you, then you're just going to end up having to give up loads of foods eventually, because, you know, essentially it's not the food, it's the leaky gut. Some people, of course, do have genuine intolerances. So I just mentioned if someone's celiac, they cannot eat gluten. It's just not worth it for them. They have to avoid it at all costs. Any wheat-containing food, gluten-containing food has to be out. And other people do have genuine intolerances like lactose, or they have this gluten intolerance like I just mentioned that isn't necessarily celiac. Some people are intolerant to eggs and soy. And if they are, you know, they just keep trying to go, they take the food out and they keep trying to go back to it and they keep getting the same response, even though they've done all this lovely work on their gut, then, you know, for those people, it's just an intolerance to those foods and they keep them out. So we do need to know our bodies. We need to listen to our bodies and know, you know, be discerning about what that might be. And then we've got food allergies, which is a completely different thing. You know, that's food allergy is basically the anaphylactic shock, like that you might get from peanuts, for example. And that's completely different to intolerance. The other thing that can start to be impacted is mood and brain function, because there's a huge nerve called the vagus nerve that connects the gut and the brain. There's lots of other nerves that connect the gut and the brain. This is also known as the gut-brain axis, which basically means the gut-brain communication. And it works, evidence shows that it works both ways. The brain communicates to the gut communicates to the brain. And this gut connection becomes even more relevant during perimenopause and menopause. 90% of our serotonin is made in the gut, and this is our happy, sort of balanced mood brain chemical neurotransmitter. And if we're now more susceptible to gut bacterial imbalances, that gut microbiome shifts I talked about, and the leaky gut situation, it becomes harder for our gut to make all that lovely serotonin, which will then start to impact mood, anxiety, and sleep. And this can also apply to other important brain chemicals as well, like dopamine for motivation, focus, GABA as well for calm, anti-anxiety effects. So there's a huge link between our mood and the gut. So really, it's all, everything's just kind of tied in with each other. We want to support the gut as a whole, just now more than ever. And then constipation and reflux is a common complaint in perimenopause as well. So the erratic and declining estrogen starts to impact our gut motility, which is the efficiency of gut emptying, which can then start to lead to constipation. Also slow to digest, so to sort of break down our food. Now, a healthy gut has a fully formed bowel movement at least once per day, and it feels like a complete emptying. So this, I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that I was starting to experience some gut issues in the last month or so. Now, I said it could be due to the stress of moving, or is it that as I'm in the throes of perimenopause, you know, month on month at 45, I'm moving further into it? And is it a case of declining estrogen even further than, say, 3 months ago? And now I'm starting to notice it's affecting my gut. Who knows? I will test things out over the next few months to see. I always have fully formed, really good quality bowel movements every day, if not once, then sometimes twice. And it feels like a complete emptying. You just know that was successful. I haven't experienced a movement like that in 4 weeks. We moved 4 weeks ago today, and I have not experienced an empty like that in 4 weeks. I've had loose stools, horrible gut issues. So again, I probably do think it's due to stress, and maybe my nervous system's just not quite settled yet. We've only been here a month, everything's so different, and we've had a few issues, a few teething issues moving in as well. But it could also, like I said, be an estrogen thing, so I'll have to just work on both things over the next few months and try and get things back to where they were, because we can get things back to where they were. Yes, these things are more likely now in perimenopause, but it doesn't mean that we just accept them and live with them. It's just knowing is the empowering part. This is what the podcast is all about, is empowering you and then knowing what to do to support it. And I do know what to do to support things. Hopefully I will be able to get things back on track. It can just be normal, not normal. It can be common in perimenopause to start noticing less regular bowel movements, but it's far from normal. It's just common. And that reduced motility, also coupled with more stress in our midlife than we might have had in our 20s and earlier 30s, and the negative changes on our microbiome I've just talked about, it can soon just start to result in this bigger picture of bloating, constipation, IBS type symptoms, all of which maybe they weren't a problem until now, or they've started to become worse in, as you're in perimenopause and moving further through it. Estrogen, when it comes to kind of reflux and motility, estrogen plays a role in maintaining the function of what's known as our lower esophageal sphincter. So this is a muscle that prevents your stomach acid from flowing back into the esophagus and causing gastric reflux. When estrogen levels are erratic or declining later on in perimenopause, that sphincter can weaken, making it easier for stomach acid to reflux into the esophagus and come up into our mouth. Also, declining estrogen can affect our digestion. It can start to slow it down. That's something I've definitely started to notice when I'm sitting eating a meal. I can feel this slower digestive process and then these gut symptoms later that just were not a problem for me before. So it can start to slow down that digestive process, allowing food to linger in the stomach for longer. And that also contributes to gastric reflux. And also what I really want to note here, though, as I've just kind of touched on it with my own situation, is that stress can do all of this as well. So low estrogen may not always be the culprit, especially if you're experiencing things like this sort of in the earlier phases of perimenopause, when it's unlikely that you have low estrogen. So I don't think I have low levels of estrogen yet. I have no other symptoms of low estrogen as yet. I definitely have perimenopause symptoms. I have estrogen. I have symptoms of the estrogen roller coaster and low progesterone, but I don't quite yet have symptoms of chronically low estrogen. So I don't think I'm quite there yet with the declining estrogen levels. So for me, I think it's potentially a stress situation because, as I've said, you know, moving house is very stressful. So always be mindful of stress here. Never just think, oh, you know, we don't just want to put everything down to perimenopause and the change in hormones. While they're probably contributing, for sure, what's your stress like? What's your life load? What's your day-to-day life? What's your head saying? Where's your head at? You know, what things are stressing you out? Where can you make small changes? Where do you need to make small changes? You know you do, but you're just not addressing it. You know, what things have you let slip? What things do you know you could weave into your days that you're not quite yet doing? I know for me, there's a lot in the last 4 weeks, I've just not made the time or the headspace to just sit and meditate like I used to. I had, before we moved, I had a great routine in our old home and our old area. And I'm now just still 4 weeks in trying to find my feet, I think, again, with that routine. And that needs to come quickly because, as I said, my gut's really, really feeling it at the moment. So always, always be mindful of stress, no matter what point you are in the perimenopause, menopause journey. And the final thing to mention is that blood sugar imbalances can play a big role as well, because any sort of blood sugar dysregulation, if we're not breaking our, if we're not sort of absorbing glucose efficiently, which I've talked about in previous episodes, insulin resistance versus insulin sensitivity, and how that's more, we're more prone to insulin resistance during perimenopause and how to balance our blood sugar levels. So do listen to previous episodes on that. But we do really need to be mindful as well of the gut, because more sugar left available in the bloodstream means that it gets into our gut and there's more sugar available for the pathogenic gut bacteria to thrive. So pathogenic gut microbes, also known as unfriendly bacteria, they thrive on sugar. They love it. And that really does help to feed them. So again, just being mindful of excess carbohydrates, particularly refined carbs from white flour products, you know, sugar, confectionery, all of these things really do allow that pathogenic bacteria to thrive. Okay, so I've been through the kind of main shifts and changes that we start to experience in gut health and how perimenopause is linked to that. But what can we do? So we need to look after our gut health now more than ever before in our lives. In the previous episode, which is episode 35, I broke down the 5R approach, the 5Rs for healing and resetting your gut. And this is what I take my clients through. It's how I help my clients to look after their gut and myself. Some of us need to focus on all 5 of the R's, while others may just need to dial in 1 or 2 or 3 of them. It just depends on the person. So I'll refer you back to that episode, episode 35, to go, where I'm talking about perimenopause and autoimmunity. But I really go into that 5R approach about halfway through or three quarters of the way through the episode. But I'll recap the top nutrition and lifestyle habits for healing and resetting your gut now as well. So absolutely more important than anything is dialing in stress, nervous system support day to day. And I'm saying this to myself as well. And after this episode, I'm going to lie down or sit for 4 minutes. I'm going to set my timer for 4 minutes, my meditation timer, and do exactly this. So for example, 4-6 breathing, where you're breathing into a count of four, out to a count of six, repetitive, just repeating that for about 3 to 5 minutes. Ideally using a very nice meditation timer on something like Insight Timer. The Insight Timer app is great. It's free. There's a paid version, but I've been using the free version. They have a lovely timer that just has a lovely sort of gong sound when it comes to your chosen time limit. And you just repeat the 4-6, 4-6 breathing ratio for your chosen time. I'm going to do 5 minutes when I finish recording this. Doing that first thing in the morning, last thing at night is also really, really helpful. Again, something that I've been letting slip. Spending time in nature, mindfully, not listening to anything or speaking on the phone. Being mindful in nature, listening to the sounds, looking at everything, looking out at horizons. All of these, this has been shown to support the nervous system and calm the stress response. Meditation, any kind of meditation, guided, sitting on your own in silence and just focusing on your breath. And every time your thoughts go off, which they will a million and one times in the chosen time that you're sitting there for, just bring your mind back to your breath, even if you have to do that a million times. Anything, you know, doing these sorts of things for a few minutes a day, getting into nature for at least 2 hours across a week. So however you can split that out through your week is really helpful. If it's just 10 minutes in some sort of nature per day, however you can make it work. And of course, manage your life load. Where can you make changes? Where can you get support? Bring people in to help lighten your load. What do you need to do to lighten your load? What things are you continually saying yes to when you don't want to, whether it's social or work commitments or other commitments in your life? Where can you sort of start to manage your life load a little bit better? All of those things will really support your nervous system. Never eat when you're stressed. Never eat on the go. That's not conducive to digestion. You're literally just hoovering food. It's not going anywhere. And it's just going to cause damage to the gut lining and issues with your gut microbiome as well. Chew each mouthful completely thoroughly before you swallow it. I always say this, there's no more teeth once our food goes down into the gut. The teeth aren't there. They're in your mouth. So chew and chew and chew really well until you've swallowed that mouthful. Remove, in terms of foods, thinking about removing inflammatory foods. So these are basically problematic foods that the gut lining doesn't like. These will add insult, they'll kind of insult the gut lining, weaken it over time, break it down and start to increase those holes. And they also start to, over time, decrease the levels of beneficial, friendly, protective bacteria and increase the other ones. So these, for some people, as I said, gluten, but even if you are somebody who doesn't think you have a sensitivity to gluten, try not to be eating gluten every single day is my advice. If we're relying on it every day, so that's, you know, any white flour products, even if it's good quality spelt flour, which is the other end of the spectrum of flours, it still contains gluten. So if we're relying on these things every day, we don't necessarily know if they're impacting us. So maybe trial some time without gluten, a few weeks, a couple of weeks, a month, and see if things improve. And then you do know, okay, maybe it wasn't really working for me, but you could just maybe bring it in once a week. So my normal routine is that I enjoy really good quality spelt sourdough at the weekend, either once or twice. Since I've moved, there's so many good bakeries where we live that do these really good sourdoughs, and my partner loves it, so he buys it. And then I've had it sort of 4, 5, 6 times a week since we moved. So again, I don't know if that's bothering my gut. I definitely think it's a stress, definitely a stress thing, because it literally happened the day we moved. From then onwards, my gut issues. Could the gluten intake, the increased gluten intake, also be adding to it? Probably. But yeah, so not everyone's sensitive to it, but if we're having it every day and we're in perimenopause and we're having gut issues, we definitely just want to reduce that. A1 cow's milk, so any kind of dairy products that come from cows, whether it's milk, yogurt, cheese, this is A1 casein. So this particular protein in cow's milk has been shown to convert into an inflammatory molecule in many people. So that can be an issue, causing gut symptoms, IBS symptoms, damaging to the, you know, the gut lining. And instead we can rely on, instead we can use sheep's and goat's milk products, so cheese or milk, yogurts, because that contains something called A2 casein, which doesn't convert into the inflammatory compound. So I just avoid cow's milk cheeses, and I go for any of the cheeses I like. I get it made with sheep's and goat's milk instead. You can just check labels in the supermarket to see. Sugar obviously is very inflammatory. The gut lining does not like it. It just insults the gut lining a lot. Refined carbohydrates, so your white flour products, again, same thing, quite abrasive, I'd say, on the gut lining. Ultra processed foods, you know, these processed cereal bars, healthy bars, protein bars, even if they're touted as really healthy and natural and organic, they're ultra processed and they're probably not very helpful for the gut lining. Alcohol, of course, caffeine, not very helpful for the gut lining. And we want to be increasing those supportive foods. So I'm just going to go through a whole load of supportive foods, which I talked about in the previous episodes. But essentially, we want to be eating plenty of colourful vegetables, berries, herbs, spices, all the colours, your reds, yellows, oranges, browns, whites, all your dark leafy greens. Fill your plate at least twice a day with different colours and types of vegetables, herbs and spices. Again, as I said, berries. And for your carbohydrates, use whole grains like red or wild rice, brown rice, quinoa, buckwheat, and then starchy carbohydrates like carrots, beetroot, sweet potato, baby new potatoes, squash, pumpkin. Relying on these types of carbs instead of white flour, sort of white wraps, bagels, pastries and things, and pasta. These are much better options to go for. And also lentils, beans as well. Using lots of bitter greens in your salad, so chicory, watercress, rocket, fennel. These are lovely leaves to be including every day, that bitter greens that support digestion. You will find prebiotic fibers. So this is fiber that feeds the beneficial bacteria. You'll find that in onions, garlic, leeks, asparagus, Jerusalem artichokes. You'll also find that prebiotic fiber in resistant starches, which comes from potatoes or rice that have been cooked and then allowed to cool, and you're eating them cool. Green bananas, so very underripe bananas, raw potato starch powder, you can get it in powder form. Seeds, the sort of coating of seeds and nuts and legumes, so beans and lentils, contains resistant starch. You can also get resistant starch powders like inulin. I put a couple of scoops of inulin into my smoothie most days. And then fermented foods, if you can tolerate them. So sometimes they can cause histamine reactions in sensitive people. That would be women in perimenopause when estrogen's on its roller coaster. High estrogen levels can increase histamine. And also, as I mentioned earlier, the situation of leaky gut can also increase histamine issues. So if you're in that situation, then you may not tolerate fermented foods very well, like raw sauerkraut, kimchi, those kind of things. They're great to feed beneficial bacteria, but they can increase histamine reactions. So just be aware of that. We want to have lots of good fats. So your extra virgin olive oil, avocado, ground flaxseed, nuts and seeds, pumpkin, sunflower, chia, sesame, organic grass-fed butter where possible, oily fish, salmon, sardines, herring, mackerel, trout, coconut milk, coconut oil, grass-fed beef and lamb, really great sources of red meat to be using. So I get mine, I think I've said this before many times, I have a monthly farm order from an organic farm that feeds, you know, grass-fed everything. And then so I get my beef and lamb from there, and my free-range chicken as well, and turkey, also things like free-range eggs. So all of these things are really great sources of protein, really helpful for, you know, mixed with all your colourful vegetables, berries, herbs, spices, your good fats, your resistant starches, your prebiotic fibres. This really does make up a really healthy diet for your gut. And also gut healing things you can get from bone broth. So bone broth is made by simmering chicken or beef bones for 24 hours on a very low heat. You can make it yourself. It's really easy to make it yourself, as long as you can have something going for 24 hours at home. Or you can buy it these days as well. It's not the cheapest thing, but if you can source it from somewhere, maybe buy in bulk and keep it in the freezer. It's bone broth is rich in collagen, proline, glycine and glutamine, which are really great for healing the gut lining, strengthening those tight junctions basically, and sewing them back together if you like. So used therapeutically, you would be having maybe a cup every morning, first thing on an empty stomach. That's how you'd use bone broth therapeutically. Otherwise, you can just use it in cooking, you know, stock, for example. And actually, something that's really helpful is organ meats, chicken livers, because they contain a really good amount of retinol, which is vitamin A in its active form. And that's really important for supporting the gut lining as well. And if we're going to be thinking about things like supplements, high quality probiotics can be helpful to obviously refeed that beneficial bacteria that we might lose. Stomach acid if needed. Some, again, with my clients, I don't necessarily blanket statement just suggest everyone goes out and starts taking stomach acid or digestive enzymes or bile acids. But this is something I do when I work with my clients, is see who needs these things. And I'll figure that out through symptoms and taking a case history and obviously stages that they're at in their life. But comprehensive gut testing is also very helpful, and it's ideal if budget allows. It's not the cheapest thing. The comprehensive stool testing I do in my practice is with a lab called Genova Diagnostics. It's called GIFX, and it costs £355. So not everyone has the budget to do it, but if they do, it's really helpful. It's something I'm saving up to do at the moment. I haven't done it in a while. But from there, we can see if somebody needs digestive enzyme support, bile acid support, stomach acid support, to help them, you know, really properly break down their foods. Other supplements, like these are for gut healing, L-glutamine, zinc carnosine, N-acetylglucosamine, also known as NAG, DGL, which is deglycerized licorice, aloe vera, slippery elm, omega-3, so EPA and DHA supplementation, or just eating lots of oily fish. These things can be really helpful to help sew that gut lining back together as well. And they're lovely anti-inflammatory properties. So I really hope this has been helpful and practical. As always, let me know. Please do get in touch. My details are always in the show notes. You can also just find me at francescaliporotti.com. My email is francesca@francescaliporotti.com. Drop me a line. Let me know how you're finding these episodes. If there's anything that you specifically want me to talk about on coming episodes, I'd really love to know, because it really helps me to formulate, you know, my plan of which episodes I'm going to record and what I'm going to talk about. If there's anyone you particularly, any type of person you particularly want me to talk about, if anyone wants to come on and chat with me, you know, about their own experience during perimenopause, please let me know, because I would absolutely love that. And of course, if you want to book a free discovery call with me to talk about becoming a one-to-one client and getting personalized support, then you can do that via my website as well. There'll also be a link in the show notes. So thank you for listening. Enjoy this week. We're going to have a sunny week here in the UK. I hope that's you as well. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye-bye. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliporotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.